Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. Can I even say that anymore? Can I even say that The Walking Dead is on AMC anymore?
It's The Walking Dead universe now.
Oh, you're right. This was it.
Ta-da.
This was it, man. This is the final episode of The Walking Dead. It still feels like a dream. I'm like sleepwalking through this whole thing. I don't understand how it could be coming to an end. After 12 plus years of this show, I don't know. That's it. It's called Rest in Peace.
Do you feel like Kevin Garvey at the end of The Leftovers? Do you feel like Frodo at the end of Lord of the Rings? Like it's finished? Are you at peace? Are you happy? Are you glad? Are you sad it's over? Are you glad that it happened?
All I know is we're the ones who live. And we survived The Walking Dead.
We ain't The Walking Dead, for sure.
We ain't them, yeah, for sure.
I love it. For real, no cap, as my son says. What did you think of this finale?
Walking Dead died like it lived, which is like sometime, occasionally good, mostly bad. Good acting propping up like mediocre writing, and undercut by poor directing. It felt like they hit a decent out on this, and I don't feel cheated in any way. I mean, other than spending 12 years of my life talking about the show, hundreds of hours talking about the show. I don't feel cheated by this finale. I feel like it delivered all the notes it needed to deliver. Didn't dwell too much on setting up spinoffs, which I was surprised by. I thought they'd spend a lot more time with Daryl, like making pleas to Carol to come with them, or Maggie and Negan teaming up.
He's got a baguette and a beret. Come on.
Think of the bread. The cheese. My God, the cheese. it didn't spend any time doing that. I think they're kind of letting the shows that are going to be part of the Walking Dead universe in the future set all that stuff up. And I think that's a smart move.
And they did not do it. There was
a
good amount of setting that stuff up and setting those relationships up. But they felt, for the most part, paying off season-long arcs that were probably written to, you know, that eye. But
long arcs. I mean, the Daryl and Carol arc has been going on since season two. So season one? The entire show. And it felt like a nice, a really beautiful cap for that stuff. And also setting up the spinoff, Daryl Dixon.
Yeah, I think that, you know, my man Daryl goes down, has never been pinned down on an on-screen relationship. It's always been in the past, hinted at, but like he fucking swerved. He curved Connie so hard at the end there. She bounced off his atmosphere and is lost in space now.
He's even unencumbered by the relationship he had with Dog, who is nowhere to be found in this episode.
He is seen for 2 seconds, and they do mention that they're going to keep... Yeah, yeah. There's a dog sighting, and I think Judith mentioned that they're going to look after him while she's gone. But there's a lot of... Yeah. This is a messy baby of an episode, but honestly, it paid off better than I thought. Like, the last 2 weeks, I was really bracing for this being a total shit show of your princess is another castle, the show's actually going on these other things, and it's, it wasn't that, but it also, I felt like it got... a pretty satisfying send-off, and I think what made it work is a crazy spectacular pyrotechnic middle part of this episode that essentially finishes the definitively all plots and all open questions and gives the people what I really wanted to see, that end where they're all just kind of happy and peaceful and relaxed. There's a thing that happened in the first third of this episode that I thought was going to be impossible to recover from. Like something so phenomenally stupid, the supermom sequence with Rosita, that actually I still feel that way about, but I felt like the show paid the iron price for it.
Okay.
I was also like, dude, this show reduced me to tears at the end, and I cannot explain it. I know I'm a big softy. I know I've dealt with a lot of, like, I've dealt with some death in my recent past. If you don't know, my mother passed away just a few months ago. And last weekend, I went with my sister up to my dad's to help him plan his estate, because we kind of got like, oh, shit, this is something that we weren't ready for. We need to kind of get ready for it. And I spent a lot of time about thinking about family and the people that we've lost along the way. And maybe that. But the second time when I watched, because I was watching this episode twice, the second time I'm like, well, surely I got all that out of the system. No, the shit still hit me. The stuff with Rosita and Eugene, and just the fact that Rosita is kind of like Moses. She's going to die inside of the promised land. I don't know. That just really got to me. So it's crazy this stupid show was able to wring out this amount of emotion between that and Daryl and Judith and all that stuff. I was surprised at how kind of well it worked, even though it never stopped being the Walking Dead that I hate too.
Oh yeah, no, to the bitter end, it was that Walking Dead. But that Walking Dead has been at times excellent because of the acting, and we've talked about it when it happens. My favorite scene in this episode is the Maggie and Negan conversation, where Maggie tells Negan, yes, "I'm never going to forgive you for what you did to Glenn, but you can stay in this community. And just know that some days it'll be hard for me."
I'm trying to.
Negan says nothing in this scene, but he says everything he needs to say, which is exactly nothing. It's an amazing scene from two amazing actors. And The Walking Dead manages to pull those scenes out of its ass from time to time. And they have several of them in this episode.
It's because, as you said, they just, you know, they're phenomenal actors. You know, when we see some of the pedigrees. Some of the pedicures, too.
Negan's toes are looking tight.
Well, speaking of toes, like, Rick's out there getting a mud treatment, you know, getting a spa treatment at the banks of the zombie shores.
What the fuck's he doing? Yeah, we'll talk about
that.
Hot
mud between his toes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his toes were looking well. No, the pedigree that these people have, like Seth Gillum, veteran of The Wire, one of my favorite shows of all time. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who's been so good. And I'm almost glad that we came back just to see... I don't think I've ever seen him do anything where he shows vulnerability or any gear other than just confident badass. And the work he did with Lauren Cohen, I thought was pretty astonishing. And if you'd asked me that, like, they would, that the cornerstone of this fucking episode would be a tearful goodbye between a pork sandwich and the action Barbie. That, by the way, I was introduced to those two when he would watch her get railed by Abraham.
Yeah.
On a semi-nightly the idea that they would get actually salty tears out of this guy for that, I would have said you're a damn liar. But they did.
Yeah, it's a great scene. I always appreciate. Like, I have a feeling when it comes to these emotional scenes that less is more, and so I really love those scenes where there isn't so much of a reciprocation of dialogue. It's more just like a character listening to another character pour their heart out. And feeling that with them, but not necessarily trying to inject themselves into it or anything like that. And they get a couple of those scenes, like Rosita, when Eugene is saying like how much she has meant to him, she doesn't say much, you know, but she lets it come through in her expression. And I Yeah, I'm super impressed by those scenes.
And for the extent that they do set up the next series, there was enough that I think is intentional meta irony in the way they did it that I thought it was funny. Like, for example, if they wanted to get across the idea that Denai Guerrera filmed these scenes in between takes on Wakanda Forever, they couldn't do a better job than having her show up in the outfit she did.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Her faux chainmail, leather.
That's this close to being a Wakanda Forever supersuit.
Yeah,
and
great.
Two, the fact that like Daryl and Carol have a conversation about how like, hey, we're supposed to have a series together. I'm not gonna come. It'll be better for both of us. Like, I just thought that was like, I don't know if that's intentional, if that's just the way it worked out, but it just brought a smile to my face to see, you know, Denai with her sword and this goofy armor she's wearing, and she's mm-hmm. riding off into the eternal horde of Valhalla or whatever. I thought that some of that stuff was pretty entertaining. And I also felt like this show let a little bit of the money out of the coffers, and they had a stupendous special effects sequence. Mm-hmm. They had amazing music throughout. I think that's one of the reasons that it worked. Yeah. It's like I think has phoned it in for a while. In fact, I've been noticing a lot of episodes are Bear McCreary and some other guy. Uh-huh. Where it's like, I don't even know if he's even scoring. But I know he came back. Did you notice that in the intro, it sounded a little bit different?
Uh-huh.
Because it turns out
I almost never watched those, but I did this time, and it was very different, yeah.
They got a studio orchestra or symphony orchestra to do the thing with them. And you can hear how much fuller and richer.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of excitement carried into the rest of the score because it was like on fucking point.
Mm-hmm.
And all the exciting stuff and all the dramatic stuff. But yeah, there's also a good amount of stupid shit. But I got to say that against all odds, because especially if you had told me Greg Nicotero was directing this thing, I'd have been like, oh, for fuck's sake, why are we even bothering to watch? It's not going to pay off anything. It's going to be shitty. I thought, again, grading on a Walking Dead curve, this was a pretty good finale. I felt satisfied.
I felt the Nicotero effect in this episode. I was very confused by the hospital sequence and how that all met up with the other stuff that was going on. And I don't think it does. I think this is one of those Nicotero hallmarks where just fucking plaster over it and hope nobody notices.
Yeah.
And none of it actually makes sense. But we'll talk about that in more detail when we get there. But it's not by no means a perfect finale. I think there's a lot of stupid stuff The Walking Dead is known for. And we'll talk about all that in great detail, I'm sure.
Before we get to, what did you think about the amount of deaths in this episode? Because the thing that we talked about, how the big, really big pieces were off the table, you couldn't touch.
Uh-huh.
What do you think of the, but there were some big deaths, I think. Maybe lowercase b, lowercase d, but I thought just what did you think of the amount? Were you surprised that they didn't totally clean house? Did you? I felt like maybe they left one on the table.
Curious which one, because I felt like Luke. It almost felt ridiculous to bring Luke back at this point and then just kill him off.
Right.
He had no effect on the story.
That felt like cheating, even though they went for fucking broke. Oh my
god. It's like
god.
If they brought Heath back and then immediately killed him the next episode. Like,
kinda. Almost
it's
that bad.
Pointless.
Yeah. Or Morgan. Yeah.
Sure. I think Rosita is the most affecting one.
Oh, for sure.
Which one do you think they left on the table?
I think they could have offed Lydia. I think they could have offed Aaron. Okay. They needed one more. They needed one more to make it feel like
Jerry.
Oh, Jerry. See, they need to leave Jerry on the table.
It would be
Ezekiel,
impactful.
Although I thought Ezekiel was well done. I actually was kind of thinking in the that we might get a Carol sacrifice since, you know, like I don't know how far in advance they knew that she's bowing out. But like since her and Kang were kind of attached to the hip of that project, I thought that like that might be an interesting way to just kind of write her out of the show. But I feel like they're going to have her back as a very special guest. Probably in season one of the Daryl show.
They could. Yeah.
Because she even said on the show, like, oh, yeah, we'll see each other again. So that I imagine. I don't know. Like, and that's the other thing is I wonder. It seems like they're sending everybody on a trajectory where they plausibly would never come back to Alexandria again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, especially
so they don't.
Once you taste the bread and cheese. in France.
Yeah, and even if they did, if they want to go back to Alexander, they could like drag Nabila out of retirement and be like, oh, where's Jerry? Oh, he's off with the kids, you know? Mm-hmm. Carol, oh, she's making stew. Like, you know, like they could just... They don't have to have like
she's chasing a mouse around the kitchen,
right? Do you think they're going to keep all these sets? Like, is Alexander going to be? Are they going to keep that going?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
No, I can't see how that would be. There's no profit in it for them. I would assume that AMC would rather abandon that set, not pay for the maintenance on it.
And book some sessions with the volume.
And then, yeah, go in and post however sloppy it needs to be and
green screen
recreate it, yeah. Alexandria out of cardboard and green screen.
Because I'm probably going to watch a few of these spinoffs just for shits and grins, and I'm expecting they're going to be cheap as hell. I'm expecting sci-fi, sci-fi era levels of cheapness.
How much?
Like a notch above Sharknado.
How little outdoors adventures do you think Dead City is going to have in it? Because that's where it gets expensive, right? The indoor stuff you could do all fucking day. You could just say, hey, we're in New York and we're inside of a building.
Well, everything I've seen is nighttime, and even the street stuff you could do in a soundstage. So probably a lot. Probably most of it.
Yeah.
Very little. What are you going to do on location? How the hell would you do on location Brooklyn, Manhattan scenes?
Right. For the amount of money that AMC wants to spend? Come on.
Shoot it dead for live or whatever you call it. Yeah, like that's going to be...
Sure. Shoot it crowded for empty. Yeah.
Right. Because at this point, to do it right, you'd also have to almost do it as a period piece because this show started 20 years before. So like you can't have, you know, you'd have to kind of get a whole bunch of shitty Ford Tauruses and... You know, you couldn't have all new. Although I don't know that they've really relaxed that. I'm pretty sure I've seen some 2017 Kia Sorentos driving around that shouldn't be there. But
yeah, I mean, if you were going to do the obligatory Times Square shot in New York, you'd have to edit out Guy Fieri's restaurant,
right?
Because that ain't there 20 years ago.
Make sure the Broadway is showing the right things that they did in the epoxy. But I guess that's the other thing. It wouldn't surprise me if they have a couple establishing shots because you kind of have to. You have to have at least one big budget.
Totally.
Yeah. Because if you're not going to have Times Square falling to the dead, then what the fuck are you even doing?
Right. Like, it's always no Times Square. That's the New York
show.
No
one put a gun to your head and said, you know where Negan and Maggie's got to go? The most expensive location on the planet to film. That's where they got to go.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see how all those go. I might check one out just for shits and grins, but
yeah, I definitely want to. And then I they made it easy on me because I'm not going out with from a place of hatred. Honestly, I saw because I went into the subreddit, the Walking Dead subreddit, and there's a lot of people they're shitting on Angela Kang and her era. I think that season 9 through the end of season 10 is, if not a golden age, a silver age of The Walking Dead, where someone made as much chicken salad from chicken shit as they possibly could. Mm-hmm. And if you want to accuse her of phoning in vast stretches of season 11 after they jerked her around on a spinoff project and they changed the filming location and boxed her, like, and they robbed her of a free hand of writing this thing because they said, the five most popular characters, don't worry about doing anything with them because we're going to spin them off. I think she did a hell of a job. And I know she's doing something for the MCU now on Disney Plus. I actually am super interested in that project because I would like to see what she does with a decent budget without people that, you know. And I know that Marvel and the Disney Plus stuff isn't perfect.
Oh, no.
But they're a whole level different from heads up their asses than the AMC folks.
They're willing to spend money
shoulder deep, you know.
Yeah, and I will say I'm not disappointed by this season thematically. I think they had a vision for where they were going with this Commonwealth stuff, and they landed there, in my opinion.
I thought it made a lot like it the thesis for when is it go time? It seems to me it's like, well, you should try to come up with a peaceful resolution until whatever powers that be make it impossible. They've engineered a situation. It's such a clusterfuck that everything's falling apart anyway. And people got it, like, you know, no one really overthrew Pamela. she just fucked things up so bad that they had to they were forced to remove her from power.
And I feel like, and when you do gain the power back, you don't have to be those people that you were fighting, right? You don't have to become them. We ain't them.
You don't. I do think it's interesting they yada yada through the first year and they just came back. Sure, sure. Like, they couldn't even write a good, the world's best political speech. It was just the Tenacious D tribute, you know? Pretty fucking hard to write the greatest political speech in the world. No, that was just a tribute. Do you want to get into it, or we got some other? I mean, we spent 20 minutes just on our general impressions.
Yeah, I'm ready to talk about the episode proper.
Let's go to work. Let's tune this episode up. Hey, don't shamble off. We'll be right back after the break.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back, survivors. Here's even more about The Walking Dead.
All right, we start with Daryl taking Judith to the hospital for her gunshot wound, which, if you forgot, she was shot last episode by Pamela Milton herself. He's knocked out by troopers who leave him for the approaching walkers to devour. But Judith wakes up, struggles to her feet, blocks the hospital doors so the walkers can't get Daryl, and then also passes out on the floor next to him.
Yep. Last vestiges of her little girl got shot strength. She's able to barricade them in.
The last bit of oxygen that's reaching her brain from her dwindling blood flow, mm-hmm. blood supply. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good for her. That was awesome.
Yeah, I like that Judith continued to be heroic in this episode.
Little ass kicker, yeah.
Little ass kicker.
Saves big ass kicker. The other group of survivors, there are several groups at this point. I don't know. This is the one with Luke in it. They were the ones who kind of gave Daryl the space to get Judith to the hospital. They attempt to fight off the herd in the lower ward. Luke, in the process, is bitten, and Jules is just devoured, completely eaten by the dead.
Got another quality, someone ripped apart screaming, like, spectacular zombie kill, spectacular zombie death. The season has delivered on that front. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we talked about it last week, but the full body explosion by train. I've never seen a zombie hit by a train.
Seeing that scene just made me disappointed. It made me retroactively disappointed because
we couldn't drive it through a whole herd.
Yeah. Why? Why? You got a train. You got one of the most powerful vehicles on the planet. Use it to plow over some walkers.
Yeah. Give them enough budget to do the big explosion in this episode and them driving through a herd on the train. Yeah. That would have been, I would have been super satisfied, but
it's okay. The explosion was cool.
Yeah, I thought it was wild that, like, when Jules got, like, oh, well, that makes sense. But then his leg got bit, and I'm like, oh, Okay, this is like first 5 minutes of the episode. We're getting some. We're putting some names at risk.
But they just let him. They just let him turn. They just let him bleed out. Like, you can't forget that Lydia was bit last episode on the arm.
No, they did take his arm. They took his leg off. It just didn't work.
It didn't work. He was bit in the ankle.
Yeah, when they pan up, he's missing his leg from the knee down.
Did he just die of blood loss then?
They have like a bone saw, bloody bone saw in his lap. And yeah, I think he just dies of blood loss.
How does Lydia not die of blood loss in a fucking RV in the middle of a herd?
That's a really good question.
But no one has in a hospital?
Yeah, well, but they did say they took all the materials. No one had a belt on, apparently.
Yeah, they used the last belt on Lydia. Yeah.
He's just in poor physical condition overall.
This is probably true.
Yeah.
So Daryl wakes up to find the survivors patching all of their wounds. He's been patched up. Carol tells him that the medicine and doctors are gone, taken by Pamela to her gated community, the Estates. Daryl wants to go there, but Carol says they're waiting to see if they can get Mercer to let them in. The only people who've ever cared about Luke watch him die. I think it's conspicuous that it's like literally just Connie, Kelly, Magna, Yumiko standing around him. Right. And nobody else cares.
And I have not seen so much made from so little since Maggie saw her sister dead.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
These people were losing their shit in a way that I didn't get caught up in this one, but I almost did. And what I thought saved it is they kept on cutting back to Carol and Daryl, who I think you're supposed to understand feel bad, but don't know, like, you're letting them have their moment. But it came off to me, like, when they're sharing glances at each other, like, they're like, this is a bit much, right? For Professor Luke?
Uh-huh, for a guy who spent the season on the bench.
The Stradivarius guy? Like, I don't know. It's like, and every time I cut to, like, Carol kind of, like, half rolling her eyes or something, I'm like, that's pretty funny. It's pretty funny.
I think
they're
trying to remember who he even is. Because these people haven't seen him in ages, right? Like, he went to Oceanside 2 seasons ago.
It's been since the midpoint in season 9, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So they probably don't even remember him. They barely spent time with him anyway. So Daryl gives Judith a blood transfusion, which is interesting. And then they hear a struggle outside and go to check it out.
The other thing I'd like, I love bagging on Magna, and I want to do it at least two more times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is with her off menu zombie stick that she gives to Luke? Did she even stab him, or did she fake stab him as a joke? Because they pass her the knife and she takes the knife, and I thought she's going to jab at the base of the skull or something. It goes off camera and she just, did she slit the back of his neck? I don't know what she actually does. I don't know that I saw brain penetration happen here.
You definitely don't see it. I think it's implied that she put it through the base of his skull into his brain.
I think she fucked it up as a joke.
Maybe.
Because she's
a
piece of shit. It's Magna. She's a huge piece of shit.
Yeah.
I also, like, when they handed him that bloody harmonica, I would have paid good money if he'd have done, like, the sickest runaround harmonica solo, Blues Traveler style. If he just starts just wailing on that thing.
Or he tries to play it, and it just shoots blood through it. sprays
the bubbles of blood coming out. And, yeah. Yeah.
That would have been amazing.
But they're going to promise to keep the music alive for the music, man. I forgot that was his whole shtick.
Me too. Yeah. Daryl, man, what are you doing? I'm pretty sure you shouldn't give a blood transfusion standing up. That seems like a recipe for disaster.
Well, that's like they're biting a little hard on the Lost thing. This just gave me big Jack vibes, you know, where he's got what the hell did he do? He gave a blood transfusion with what do they call those spiny fish? An urchin.
Yeah.
He used an urchin spine to give a blood transfusion.
Uh-huh.
So, not all the medical supplies were gone, by the way. There was some surgical tubing and some IV needles that they missed in their inventory. But yeah, we found out that Daryl in the last episode of the show is O negative.
Right.
And I love because, like, I'm like, okay, this is interesting because he's like, you know how to do this? Here, let me. And like, how the hell do you? And then he explains that Merle used to sell his blood. And I'm like, well, of course he did. Of course he did.
Amazing. amazing. I just found that hilarious.
Yeah.
Older so brother Merle forcing Daryl to spill his blood into what? Probably old beer meth. Cans. I don't know.
Or I thought you meant what they're actually going to put it into. But it's like, yeah, he's doing it all for the meth or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Lot lizards. Selling his... I don't know what young Merle was into.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah, that was hilarious. So they hear that struggle outside. They go to check it out. And then we go over to Mercer, who paces in his cell. And then Princess and Max show up and bust him out. And they load up their weapons as the herd approaches. They find out that Aaron and Lydia are in that herd. And those two rejoin the group, and they all head out to the hospital.
I liked... Because, like, when Max runs up to him and hugs him first, and I'm like, I guess that's fair. She's the sister, and she's just the new girlfriend. But then Princess, like, gives him a hug like a fucking wave rolling in from the ocean. It's just, like, full-on spider monkey, arms, legs. It almost knocks him off his feet. I thought it was pretty – that's pretty cute.
It is, yeah. And we need to take note that the regrouping is happening at the hospital here. And everybody, because in this next scene, we'll see that Gabriel, Rosita, and Eugene are going to head to the hospital too. And that's where things get shaky. But do you have anything to say about Gabriel, Rosita, and Eugene finding Coco and just sort of grabbing her and heading back to the hospital?
I mean, how excited did you get when you realized they were at the children's home and the zombies might be, they were teasing Zombaby throughout this episode.
Yeah. No Zombaby to be found.
I thought this was pretty effective. I thought it was weird. Like, Gabe was really laid back this whole episode. Like, they get in there and, like, the zombies are everywhere eating stuff. And only Rosita is like, oh my God, my baby. Gabriel is just kind of like, meh, I'll let her run off, and me and Eugene will just stick some zombies casually in the back of their head. She comes in there like one woman army mode, just like Terry guy, like just John Wick and everybody. There's this poor baby that's underneath a baby pin. I don't know how the hell this happened. There's a zombie in its face. I don't. Speaking of rest in peace, R.I.P. to this kid's hearing. Because Rosita's like letting off a dozen shots like 3 inches from this kid's skull, but she saved the baby, and I'm glad.
Yeah, no, I think it would have been sad if Coco died. Coco doesn't deserve it.
When did Eugene become a one-man killing machine? It's like they put this suit on him. Machine?
Yeah,
and I don't know which headline to go with: Plump Fiction or John Prick. Either way, he is a stone cold killer in this suit.
Uh-huh. No, he's a badass.
What'd you like better? What'd you go with, Plump Fiction or John Prick?
I think I like Plump Fiction.
Plump Fiction? Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's a pretty good one. So Judith wakes up in the hospital. She's super worried about dying because her mom went to find Rick and she wants family to get back together. It's short-lived, though, because she quickly passes out again. Rosita's group, did you want to talk about that scene? Or, like,
her speech? I want to point out to Daryl, no, but I did want to point out Daryl doing the Shane strategy from the first episode, for, you know, the pilot episode where he barricades Rick into his suite.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny that he does that and then 30 seconds later has to rapidly undo it all. But they got the reference in. I respect that.
No, I was worried that he was just going to leave her there for like a long time while they were off taking the Commonwealth over. I'm like,
at the end of this, 6 weeks later, it goes back to, you know, she's super skinny and dehydrated. Yeah, she's stumbling around in a nightgown.
Yeah. So Rosita's group is out back of the hospital with a busted ride. Carol says they have to go, so Daryl parks Judith in a room, locks the door, and then they try and keep the herd out, but they're everywhere. And one of the herd, one of these smart walkers, breaks the window with a rock, and they flood in. So they retreat out the back, where Rosita and Gabriel and Eugene are going to extraordinary lengths to escape the walkers through a second-story window. I really love the thing, you know, aside from locking Judith in a room and having to immediately undo that, I really love that they have conveniently picked up some random stragglers so that somebody can be eaten in this scenario, but not anybody we care about.
Yeah, I have another nameless survivor goes down in the foyer. It's like,
right? And I'm pretty sure they weren't even with the group until this episode, and then I don't know, suddenly they show up.
There's like 50,000 people that they could pick up in this town. It's not a big deal.
Here's the thing.
You mentioned a zombie being smart, but mm-hmm. wasn't that also a callback to the Guts episode where you had one zombie in the crowd that had a rock in its hand and that's how they got into the department store?
Yes, but they've reintroduced the concept, or I should say fresh introduction. Yeah. It's not a reintroduction. It's just like a whole new wrinkle to walkers lately mm-hmm. that they're smart. So I assume this mm-hmm. was one of them.
Yeah.
Other
than this, that's really the only, like, they were climbing and doing all kinds of things in other episodes. It's like, yeah, we had the rock, and that's something that they did 11 seasons ago. So,
no, all that smart walker stuff just feels like tie-ins to the other shows.
Set up for the next, yeah, because I hear they're going to do fast zombies, they're going to do clever zombies, they're going to be...
Sure.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about this Rosita Eugene Gabriel escape through the second story window. In no world does Eugene have the upper body strength to get to that second story window. In no world.
And unless you're trying to fail, why do you let him go first?
I have seen Vertical Limit. I know that it is a tear. You always let the strongest climber go first because you are tethered to them. And
you want to give the best chance of survival.
You don't want them hitting you on the way down.
This is a husband and wife, their child, and some other random baby
mm-hmm.
that you're putting at risk sending Plump Fiction. The guy just dubbed Plump Fiction and dress suit. And I guess I get that Gabriel's wearing his priestly smocks, too. So it's like none of these people are save Rosita are wearing what I'd call athletic attire.
Sure.
But like, that was so stupid because like if Eugene dies, that's kind of the best outcome, like in a lot of ways. But well, like Rosita and Gabe survive, you get that. But yeah, she insists on not only just going first or second, but last. And she has Coco on her back. No, not on her back, strapped to her chest.
And if Eugene, notorious dumbass, falls on them. Like falls in the first in line, they're
it's
both
over.
Dead. They're all
it's
dead.
It's over. Yeah. You won't have to worry about the zombies. You'll just be crushed.
Speaking of crushing, I cannot believe that Rosita does not crush this child to death with the acrobatics she's pulling. She's climbing up this pipe. That's hard enough with a child strapped mm-hmm. to your chest. Mm-hmm. And then she jumps from the ambulance to the pipe and somehow does not crush this child against a brick wall.
And it looked like they did that in real life with a stunt woman. Uh-huh. So like, I thought that made that because that seemed ridiculous, but someone like really did it appear apparently. I don't know if they did a trick angle or what, but like I thought that looked pretty cool. And I was about to call bullshit because this is one of those things where it's like we talk about this a lot in the final season of Game of Thrones. Don't put someone in a situation where they cannot possibly survive and then have them survive. It's just
Glenn Dumpster, right?
It's something you can do, I guess, in the last episode of a series, but it's just something you shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, well, she explodes out of here, Neo from the Matrix style. And I'm like, well, you know, you hear about these moms lifting, you know, cars off their kids. They get these crazy strength and they're protecting their children and all that. And I'm like, it kind of looked cool. And I thought it was a neat stunt. And I was really getting it bothered me because it's like one of those things where it's like, well, why tease it? Mm-hmm. And then I felt like the show, it turns out, with the Game of Thrones reference, they paid the iron price. And like, once I found out that she'd actually got bit in the scene, I thought on second watch, I thought it was pretty cool.
The trouble being she's wearing 15 hoodies. Like she's wearing so many hoodies, so many layers of cotton and fabric and various mm-hmm. things that there's no way she could get bit where they show her getting bit.
I tend to agree.
Like
That's
I watched that scene.
My complaint.
I guarantee a walker couldn't bite through one hoodie, let alone the 4, 5, 8 layers she's wearing. She's so many layers.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've often remarked, like, you know, a sturdy denim jacket or leather would completely defeat zombies. But, you know, they're peeling dudes out of whole suits of armor this season. What are you going to do?
Fair. I guess they pulled down her hoodie and got their teeth in behind her neck.
That's
yeah,
right. That's right. There's the smart zombie that went for the nape.
Coyotes are designed to cover those areas specifically. Specifically.
No one said a job, but there was like 20 zombies to do it too. It's like only one of them had to get lucky, you know?
True. Throw enough teeth at the problem, they'll get it done.
Yeah.
All right. Here's where the episode gets.
Wait. The other thing is, can I also? So they show Rosita falls and Eugene's like, no. And he's just staring at Gabriel is like, rest in peace. And he's on to the next one. He does not react at all.
Wait, no, he says, I'm coming. And he jumps back like he's about to rush down there and try and help
her. I thought he just was like,
unless he's talking to Jesus and saying, I'm coming.
he might be proved that he's not. No, I thought I didn't see that he's saying I'm coming. I thought he just like took a step from the window and was like going on like, she didn't make it.
She's done.
She didn't make it. I'm gonna be starting the off season unattached, no kids, no women. Gabriel's single and he's ready to mingle. But no,
yeah, I think he was going to help her. Here is where the episode gets really rough for me. A lot of rough ground to run over here because everyone is just somehow at a train depot outside of the estates now. Like there, last we knew, the group inside the hospital was headed out the back to where Rosita is, and that area is entirely overrun with walkers. We never see them escape the hospital. They're carting Judith on a fucking gurney. Mercer is inbound for the hospital, but we have no idea when or how he gets there.
I think you're supposed to understand that loading docks is the back of the hospital. It's the receiving area of the hospital. And it hasn't been surrounded by zombies. The front and sides are surrounded, but the rear has not been surrounded
yet. Up against a train track?
Is it a train track?
Yeah, there's a train track.
It looked like loading docks to me, like, you know, where you'd get your, you know, hospital mask deliveries and stuff.
I saw overgrown train tracks that they're walking on.
A lot of those on the sets of The Walking Dead.
I mean, if that's the implication, then why? Rosita says we're in the back alley of the hospital. So this butts up against not only.
How many backs are there to the hospital?
Exactly. The beast with 12 backs is hospital, apparently.
I mean, you've seen a lot of hospitals. They are designed where there's multiple entrances and they're not exactly like saltine cracker boxes. You know, they can have interesting shapes and
Rosita and Eugene and Gabriel get there? Like, they don't know where everybody's headed, right? They're just in the back of the hospital waiting for them to get back to the hospital,
right? Like a second before they're about to go to the state, Aaron and Lydia come shambling up out of the dead. Like, that's the other thing. This gut situation's gone way too far.
Yeah,
everybody just kind of magically shows up at the right time, and then everybody else being in the gate, I thought that was kind of cool, but yeah, I'll give you that. It is a little fuzzy, the geography.
Yeah, I thought super fuzzy, and they don't even try. It's not like they make an effort with a line of dialogue or something to say, like, meet us around the other back. Yeah, they just expect you to kind of say, I guess everybody got there.
If I'm being charitable, someone pointed out, I think I got this on Reddit a couple weeks ago, that there's someone internally in The Walking Dead made like a map of the Commonwealth where it has like, here's the estates and here's the lowers and here's the hospital and here's Father Gabriel's church and here's like all the different locations and how they're related. And maybe the production staff, like the Nicotero, knows this area so well that they feel like they don't. You know, it's like sometimes people are really hard explaining concepts of stuff they know really well because they don't know like how to break it down or like, and maybe that's it. But like, that's still pretty fucking bad. Like that's why you have, you know, people that supervise continuity and, you know, checking that kind of thing. Just sort of like, hey, dude, did we tell the people what they need to know to enjoy this episode?
Yeah. And I mean, 90% of the way there, but that other 10% I feel is important. So they're all out back the hospital, I guess, where the walkers apparently haven't found this back yet. Mercer's group loads up weapons and ammo as his guys arrive to help them breach the gates of the estates. They take Judith to the safe house that Mercer's guys have set up to be treated by Tommy, and he operates on her while Aaron patches up Lydia and tells her what to expect with her amputated arm. She's really down on life. She's worried about Casey Jones. Aaron, do you care about Lydia in these scenes.
I was surprised at how little I cared about Lydia. Because I kind of taken a shine to Lydia, but like, I thought this conversation, Aaron, was interesting because I thought it was ostensibly talking about phantom limb pain, but I think he's also trying to broach the topic of him losing his husband.
Yeah.
And her losing Casey. It's like, you know, it'll surprise you how you'll feel it sometimes, but I thought it was a nice little double meaning conversation. Mm-hmm. And also the Aaron's just not ready to give up hope, which, you know, good thing, because there's still hope in the air.
Yeah, this was just not the scene that affected me the most in this episode.
Okay.
By a long shot. Jerry shows back up, too. I don't know if we talked about that. Not yet. I thought it was already.
He shambles in with the people from the gates.
Oh, okay.
They do talk. You might have in the notes, she's scared that Jerry and Casey in this scene aren't coming back. She name checks them both, but.
Okay. I was scared too because I felt like his goodbye was pretty final, like final enough.
Yes, they did a good job of baiting his death and not actually delivering it because I was terrified throughout the entire episode until they made it to the happy ending, you know?
Yeah. Don't shamble off. We'll be right back after the break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Welcome back, survivors. Here's even more of The Walking Dead. All right, let's go to Maggie finding Negan leaving with her rifle. He's apparently going to go sacrifice himself to kill Pamela so that Maggie doesn't have to. and he apologizes to her for Glenn's death, and then Maggie takes the rifle and invites Negan to come with her.
I thought this was good. Like, it didn't occur to me, even though they showed this situation happen, that when Negan was on his knees trying to beg for his life, and then they drag his wife, like, that he was literally in the exact same position that he put Maggie in 6 years ago.
Yeah.
I thought them connecting that dots was pretty powerful. And then, you know, I thought his apology, it's like, even he knows, it's like, you know, he's in a position for the first time, he knows exactly what is required and what kind of apology he needs, and he knows that there's no way he can give it, mm-hmm. you know? I thought it was pretty good. Now, I don't understand why Maggie doesn't take him up on his offer, because his logic is like, I think he's probably right. If they go out there and kill, you know, that helping without the group all helping out, if they go in there and kill Pamela, they both die. There's no way they survive that assassination attempt.
Yeah, they don't really set it up like that, though. I mean, they
how do they set it up then?
They set it up as they're pretty far away. Like, when we actually get to it and they're looking at Pamela through the rifle scope.
So is
and
Negan
all that,
just like, wrong? Was Negan just like,
I felt like the way they staged it, he might have been wrong. They needed to stage it where they were maybe closer in or had a harder time getting there, because they just show up inside the gates. There's no indication that it was hard for them at all to get in, which means it may not be hard for them at all to get out. So I felt like he was right in this scene, but then it undercut it later.
That's what I'm saying. Like, something is undercut somehow, something here.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the emotional impact. I think that all hits, and that's all good.
I just thought this is dumb anyway, the idea that, hey, Maggie, you and me, we can end this. We don't need anybody else. It's like, well, that's fine. But like, if you kill Pamela in this crisis situation, what if the colonel takes over and she's worse?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Like, you just don't fucking know.
You just have to start killing down the chain of power, I guess, until you get to somebody who's not an asshole. That's one way to do it. Eugene tells Rosita that she has to teach Coco to swim if she wants her to be confident. I'm not kidding. That's what he says. Mm-hmm. He realizes that she got bit, and that Rosita got bit when they were trying to climb the downspout. They say, I love you to each other, just in the platonic way, no funny business. Then Eugene goes back to sit with Max.
This scene kind of got to me. It was the start of the tear jerking. I think Kristen Serratos, is that her name? Has always been kind of underserved, and she's always had gears that to show, you know, because it's such an ensemble cast and she was such kind of a tertiary figure. They never quite figured out what to do with her, but like, they gave her some red meat and she ate it up. And even made Josh Dermott. What's his name? Josh
McDermott.
McDermott. Mm-hmm. Even made him look good. Because I was just saying that, like, the problem with Eugene's performance is it only works when he's being a buffoon. The second he tries to, like, level with somebody like Max or show some emotion, just the trick, it's like watching a magic trick from an angle that the magician doesn't intend you. It's like you just see all the artifice of it. I didn't feel any of that with this, because I don't know if it's just a history that they've got or whatever, but, like, it fucking worked.
No, that they drop all of his idiotic speech patterns is the thing.
This is true. They
write him like a normal human being for a minute.
I wonder if Nicotero did that as a directing choice. It's like, can we get rid of the $50 Kentucky Fried dialogue and words and, yeah, you know, using 10 where one will do and just have him be a person. I don't know. I've always liked Rosita. I've always thought she's been underserved. And I thought this was a great, you know, her trying to like soak up the fact that she knows she's got a limited amount of time and how she's going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And that part where she said, you got to pull your shit together. And he's like, I can't. She's like, you can, because I'm still right here and I don't want anybody else to know. I thought that was pretty powerful.
Sure. I find it hilarious that, Eugene claims himself a bit of a parent, but he comes up in Coco in the most peaceful possible time for a child's existence, when she's sleeping, and offers to take care of her. Not when she's crying, not to take her off her mother's exhausted hands. Yeah.
Not I see you got to the fun part. Can I jump in here now?
Right. So hilarious. And then Judith wakes up and apologizes to Daryl for not telling him why Michonne left. And I think that's what she means in this scene. I don't know. I'm a little confused by the dialogue here.
It honestly, this is a wild scene because they set up as Judith keeping the secret to herself just because she's terrified that if she tells her that, like, Uncle Daryl will go off half cocked and search for Rick and Michonne and leave her. And at the end of this episode, Daryl goes off half cocked into the world and leaves her. All of your inner fears about adults are correct, children. Never trust them. Never tell them what you're really thinking. They're always going to let you down. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
How can you make this be part of the episode and have her be completely abandoned? She has no parents or parental figures left at all.
It's true. The closest she gets, I guess, is Gracie at this point.
Yeah.
Got like a sister. Yeah.
By default, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I like the hey little ass kicker and her calling him hey big ass kicker. That's really that my heart on that scene.
The Mercer sees Pamela Guards shooting people who are trying to get over the gates, decides he's going to go in and help the people, and Ezekiel decides to go with him and gives a speech so rousing that everyone else joins him.
Yeah, I thought that was like Mercer, you know, like essentially making plans to take them back to Alexandria. It's like, you know, you guys have done enough. And Zeke's like, actually, and they this throughout the whole episode, as the survivors are regrouping and gathering up, they're always saying like, you know, we left a lot of people living on the roofs and we got to get it back there. And like, they've been saying like, okay, we got to get Judith, but then we're going to, and this is Ezekiel paying that off and being the leader that he's always been. He's kind of hasn't been the last few seasons, but he's Ezekiel again.
No, I love where they leave Ezekiel in this episode as the governor of the Commonwealth. That feels like the most appropriate thing, the most appropriate person to take over. I would just say, make sure your pipes don't rust out and you'll probably be good.
That's true. Make sure there's plenty of in the budget for pipe protection and the firefighting, because traditionally that's where his domestic policy has been the weakest. It's true.
Maggie and Negan spy Pamela through their sniper scope, and they're going to take the shot, but before they can, Mercer's team gets in behind Pamela and there's a standoff. The herd closes in on the people outside the gates, and Gabriel says, you know what? Fuck this. I'm just going to open the gates, whether they shoot me or not. Pamela orders him shot. Daryl orders him not shot and tells Pamela that they should be fighting together against their enemy, the Walking Dead. Let's stop there for a second.
I mean, this is great because everybody's got to, like, we came to Gabriel fresh after the trauma of him being at his church and him closing the doors on him, pameling his entire congregation. And now he's the guy that's like, fuck this. I literally can't. I cannot stand and let this happen again by proxy, and is the one that's going to break the. I like that. Yes. I like Pamela calling General Mercer a traitor and him Uno reversing it on her. And then Daryl calling bullshit on this whole situation. We all just are better than this. And also like the fact that Pamela is just wrong, just like probably Gabriel was. She's like, we let the poors in, we'll let the dead in too. No. If you'd done this 5 minutes ago, it wouldn't have been close.
Right. That's the thing that kills me. And then Mercer's standing there getting all righteous about Pamela's actions while the herd closes in on these innocent survivors. Just shoot her and be done with it, or arrest her and be done with it. Kick this thing into high gear because all these people are about to die.
Yep. And, you know, Daryl is a disciple of Rick, and he's kind of quoting the, you know, where, you know, there's just light meat and dark meat now. And we ain't the Walking Dead. I thought that was funny.
Pamela's weakness seems to be she wants to get personally involved in it, everything. She should not have been in that shootout to shoot Judith in the first place. She should not be out here at the gates to be arrested. She should be back in her office communicating with her soldiers who are out there doing the work. I don't know what her thing is here. she's,
and apparently because they were worried about, like, it is, you know, you talk about that they didn't really tie everything into a bow. They mentioned that, like, oh, Mercer can get us in without a fight. It'd have been nice to see how they did that, because you're right. Maggie and Negan get in, no problem. Take this sniper position. Mercer just rolls up with a full on squad.
They say they got somebody to let him in, but I don't know where or how.
Right.
I would have appreciated, like, a little more info.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd have been nice to see, but whatever.
All right. Let's go with the second half of this scene. Pamela's new best goon agrees with Daryl's plea about us not being the Walking Dead and that being their enemy, and turns command back over to Mercer, who immediately arrests Pamela. Negan says, oh, that's a fate worse than death for her. And they let the people inside.
Speaking for firsthand experience there.
That's true. That's true. They let the people inside the walls and then close the gates back up. And apparently Casey Jones gets in and Jerry also gets in.
Yep. Still, he just I'm not sure how that wandering. Works.
I guess they had wandered far enough away from, they had separated from the herd before.
Yeah.
This moment, and then joined up with the crowd there.
He had rescued Casey and then followed them, and then somehow got in with the group of the poor people, and they were all herded. I mean, it kind of sort of
makes
sense, but
their plan was just to stand outside the gates and hope that Pamela let them in. Like, I would think Jerry's plan would be a lot more personal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I need to get back to my group, not I'm going to join up with these dumbasses at the gate.
Yeah. Like, oh, God, I want to get back. I want to see how Nabila's doing. But the people in charge say we're not allowed in this gate. Like, right. What? This is how Casey and or Jerry roll? I don't think so.
Nah, I agree.
But whatever. Just don't think too much about it, because Nicotero didn't. Neither did Kang, if we're being honest. She already had a Mai Tai in her hand. You know, I think she's writing half these scripts from the beach, from Oceanside.
Pamela goes up to the gates and she's going to let the undead Hornsby, who shows up here, eat her face. But Judith says, nah, it's not too late to help. And Maggie snipes Hornsby.
Jim, you got to collect some internet points, because what is a gate if not a door? And
right.
Hornsby was jiggling
that knob. Oh, yeah.
He had 30, 40 zombies helping him, but he was jiggling this knob and he almost got to Pamela.
Uh-huh.
If it was up to Pamela, he would have got her.
This is true. Yeah.
God, we were so close to paying that off.
The angelic intervention. The intervention from above could save her.
Fuck Pamela. Fuck Pamela Milton.
Oh, yeah.
I hate her. I hate this. I hate everything about it. I thought this scene was so stupid. The music almost makes it work.
Uh-huh.
But Judith is like the ghost of Christmas past. Like, it's not too late, Governor. We can save everyone. You need to just make a change. And then Maggie just like, nah. And she just blows away Hornsby. She's not wrong, though.
So here's the thing. I do believe that just about anybody can be redeemed. And if you want to look at The Walking Dead and say, what's a possible path forward for Pamela? It's Negan. And we've seen it and we've loved it. You know, I think the return of Negan to sanity, to the realm of the holy, has been a positive in this show.
No, you're right. You're right. And she's having a, you know, she's having a break with reality, just as severe as Negan's was. And I just guess Negan, when he had his break with reality, he was cooler.
But I mean, this plays into the let my mercy overcome my wrath, right? Because I want to see Pamela killed. I'm fucking pissed at her. I don't want her to live to see a future in which she becomes something other than the villain. So I can understand the sentiment, but Judith is in there preaching her dad's word, you know?
I think they fucked up. They should have had Sebastian as the zombie, because I believe that she is like so horrified and drawn to his face that she has to where's Hornsby? Nah, didn't like, oh, this is my chauffeur's son that I always thought was a twerp.
I agree. Sebastian would have worked about better.
But you know, what are you going to do when you're writing scripts from the beach? 5 Mai Tais in.
Right. I think they spilled
cash in. And then, you know, she had to get $1 million buyout of that showrunner when they switched the show, you know, from Atlanta, Georgia to Paris, France. She probably got a fat payout from, you know, that contract getting dissolved. So,
yeah, she probably got a a villa or something in France. I don't know.
Well, then she should have just done the show. She's going to get a villa in France. Oh, that'd be funny if she took the severance money and bought a giant house right where they're filming.
Sure.
She's going to be like Maggie, just with who's running. Is it the Gimple or anyone that I hate? But it'd be funny if Gimple's running that show. She's got binoculars. Oh, this is a fate worse than death from a French villa. You know, oh, look at him. Oh, wow. They're trying to shoot day for night.
Struggle.
Look at him. You know,
$60 budget. He can't get this done. Are you kidding me?
That's right. It's noon. It's noon and it's bright and sunny. And this is supposed to be midnight. Just watch. I want to see how they color correct this.
Mercer lays out the plan for their new goal of taking back the Commonwealth from the dead. And this is kind of like the turning point for the episode. It's sort of the halfway. Like,
it honestly sounded like he was narrating a Next Time On, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
There was something like, oh, we just started in a new episode. And I bet when they re-air this on TV, that's exactly what it'll be.
Maybe. I would say this episode is not, it's not double length. It's only like 12 minutes longer than a standard episode of The Walking Dead.
I guess that's right.
It's 12 to, somewhere in 12 to 20. So like, I was kind of surprised because I heard it was going to be big, but it turns out it's like 68 minutes or something.
I wonder what it was like watching this on AMC with commercials. I wonder if it's another one of those things where it's like 30 minutes of commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, this was stretched out to two full TV hours for sure. But I watched it on AMC Plus. I didn't get any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So the plan seems to be to lure the herd into the estates and then blow the whole thing up. Which is kind of exactly what they do. They play music. Living Color's Cult of Personality. It draws all of the walkers into the estates. They dump gas down the storm drains. One just barrels time, and barrels getting, and barrels.
Getting money's worth out of sewers, yeah.
Full of fuel, gasoline or something. And then they open the gates. They let the walkers in and blow the estate sky high.
There's a lot of callbacks here. They had the medieval shield wall drills that we're making so much fun of during the Whisper arc. That shit paid off.
Clearing a path. Yep.
Yeah.
And this is what seasons of the sewer sets have been culminating to, right? I mean, they had a plan for that all along. The sewers in The Walking Dead are a character.
Yeah. They carry the plot.
The shit tunnels of The Walking Dead.
Tens of thousands of gallons of gasoline. They carry a lot on this show. And they all stacked all this fuel. And I don't know where they got all the dynamite. That's like, they had so much fucking dynamite that they wired into this stuff, too.
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty kind of cool that, like, they designed the record player, the contact, to be like when the record arm went back and hit the rest point. Now, that's a ticklish little setup. Well, I'd hate to be the person setting that record up and then running.
Sure.
Because, and then they had the Blue Weevil code name for Max. Mm-hmm. They called that back. I thought it was the establishing shot of like you're in Pamela's office and it's all these young pictures of her and Sebastian as a baby when the record runs out. And I don't know about you, but I thought this effect sequence was spectacular.
And I felt like this was kind of a callback to Beta's origin stuff too. The record player and the PA system and all that. This explosion they spent some money on for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the slow motion zombies being at the heart of the explosion just being vaporized and ripped apart, and the aerial shot of just the entire estate just turning into fire.
Yeah, the last time I saw, didn't the CDC look like similarly good? I can't remember. It's been 12 years.
I thought the CDC looked, unfortunately, CGI.
Really? Okay.
With this explosion, because they didn't literally blow up the building in downtown. You know, like I thought it looked I thought it looked a little fakey. That was my memory of it, but I don't know.
Okay, you could be right. But
remember,
yeah,
this was back in the days before Game of Thrones, where they weren't spending $40 million a season on things, and Walking Dead never did. But this is the best thing I've ever seen them do in terms of CG, which isn't saying much, but I'll say it.
Sure, I agree.
I mean, this is like something out of the in-game Stranger Things, you know, Like, mm-hmm. it was just beautiful and amazing. Like, the best zombie kills I've ever seen. Like, those zombies just getting, the trio of zombies is getting vaporized, like Sarah Connor in a post-apocalyptic nuclear fantasy. Like, I thought it was really cool.
And effective. I mean, the scale is something that I think could take out an entire herd.
Yeah, it just resolved all plot points and let them just easily transition into the end game of the show.
And I love the comment later. I think it's from Maggie or maybe Carol. I don't know who says, well, at least we don't have to figure out who gets your house because they blew it sky high. That's pretty good. And I think it's in this next scene here where Pamela is trying to justify her own actions by explaining to Carol and Daryl what they're in for as governors of the Commonwealth. And they lock her up and throw away the key.
Yeah, that's so lame. It's like, oh, wait until you get to be my spot and you'll have the hard problems like who's going to pick up trash and who gets to live in the fancy houses. And it's like, there's lots of hard decisions to make. And
you know what? They're a lot easier to make when you care about the people that you're making the choices for, which you clearly don't. And Ezekiel clearly does. You have a preconceived
notion of how your life should be, you know, that like you've got a, you know,
you don't have a sense of entitlement. You don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But to be fair to the real world, the show does yada yada over like all the tough things. Like
that first year,
they blew the thing up and that was it. That was the last problems they had. It was just Ezekiel and Mercer just getting stuff done from there on out. Was there tax policy? How did they divide the labor? Where did they put everybody? How do you deal with people trusting the government after they feed you to zombies?
I mean, that's taken care of by the people who overthrew that government righteously stepping into positions of power.
That's
right?
True. That's true.
They probably but trust them pretty much.
You also have a military coup that successfully transitions to civilian leadership. I would like to know more. I'd like to know more of that story. But
well, maybe you should tune in for one of the various spinoffs. Not saying they'll give you more information, but...
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be... I want to see West Wing Walking Dead is what I want to see.
Yeah. So we cut from the newly imprisoned Pamela to everyone's favorite former prisoner, Negan. I think, to be fair, the only other people in that category are Magna and Axel, and neither of them are in contention. Maggie thanks Negan for apologizing, but says she can never forgive him for killing Glenn and does give him permission to stay within their community, but says some days I might hate you. And this is an amazing scene.
Because I want to remember my husband the way he was, this beautiful, kind man. And Glenn was. He was like the good one out of all the group. He's the one that probably lost the least of his humanity and gave as much as he could to his fellow people. And he didn't deserve what he got. And like Negan realizing what a big piece of shit he was. And I thought JDM did a great job of emoting that. Like you said, he's just taken. He's not trying to defend himself. He's just letting her... and like the fact that like I want to remember him like that, but when I see his face, all I can see is you beating him with that bat and mocking his death. And like, it made a lot of sense. Made a lot of sense.
Yeah, amazing scene. I mean, Lauren Cohen is incredible, and JDM and like, is incredible opposite her.
And like we said, like we did not like a lot of the things they were doing with the Maggie and Negan reunion plot, but. But it worked enough to where you can pay off in this moment. And I think that's what Kang is very good at. She's very good at drawing the vaguely remembered threads of things that happened and elevating it with this type of stuff. That's what, like, whereas the Gimple era was having four aces and somehow losing the pot. You know?
Totally. Yep, I agree.
She bluffs real hard with the pair is what I'm saying. Hey, don't shamble off. We'll be right back after the break.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain.
featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back, survivors. Here's even more of The Walking Dead.
There's a big family meal where everyone is enjoying their victory and the company of each other. Yumiko toasts Luke, and Carol, everybody who doesn't give a shit about Luke is like, I think it's a mistake to cut to Maggie in that moment when they're toasting Luke, because she's been gone for half the time Luke was even part of any of their communities. She just fucked off. And he's been living in Oceanside for so long that even when she came back, she didn't know who he was, really.
Right.
Cut to somebody who matters in that moment. Negan walks by outside the window and nods to Daryl. You get the impression that maybe he's leaving. Maybe. No, no, no.
He's preparing to, for sure.
It'll take him a year, maybe. But
yeah.
Magna and Yumiko become a couple again, I think.
Oh, my notes just say, no, don't do it, me. You can do better.
You're you can so do much better. Better.
You don't want to. Yeah, you do. Come on now.
They really backburnered Magna this last season, didn't they? Like, I'm shocked at how backburned she was. Ever since she became a waitress serving hors d'oeuvres at fancy parties, she's been a nothing in this show. Do you think that's like because the audience kind of didn't like her?
I don't. Maybe she had some other things she was doing, but yeah, she was definitely like she came on to essentially tell the other guy that was railroaded by society to like, hey, I was in prison. I know how you feel. And to kiss Miko to give Yumiko a happy ending. But like to me, this is a night like I thought they broke up for good reasons, man.
Yes.
And like, if I was
and they didn't do anything with Magna this season to maybe think she had changed at all.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if I and I, you know, I'm not saying you should never get back together with the exes, but I definitely think you should ask what has changed.
Yes,
with yourself and the other person that would make it not go the. And I just feel like, these are people that I don't know. They just survived this death-defying experience. I was a little disappointed to see them get back together because I hate Magna. I like Miko. And I don't think they're good together. I don't think they think they're good together. But what are you going to do?
Agreed. Rosita whispers to Gabriel that she was bit, and Judith realizes the same.
It's kind of cheating to have Landslide by Fleetwood Mac scoring this whole scene because I think
it's an amazing song.
It's an amazing song. It makes you feel a certain way, and like they're doing a lot of heavy lifting here. But it's super effective. Like I just like Rosita just kind of happily as she you can see she's visibly fading is just kind of like seeing everybody be happy. This is the happy ending that Rick always wanted for everybody. And it looks like now they're going to get it. Yeah.
And a partial sad ending. Right. I mean, this whole stuff with Rosita is it's bittersweet. She's gotten to see her family and her friends in a safe place. Coco's going to be OK. But she's not going to live beyond that.
Are you now I'm thinking about it. Did Daryl give that bro nod to Negan because they had worked out in advance that he was going to leave and he's going to leave that compass to Judith? And he because like they almost did the opposite of setting up a Maggie Negan thing. Negan left the community because he got from that conversation. Maybe I'd be welcome to stay here, but like it would be unconscionable for me to do so. I don't know what he does with his pregnant wife wandering the wastelands, but he's had a wife in a bad condition in the wastelands before. So
that's maybe the one thing they should have given us a clue to. But I'm appreciative that they didn't really go hard on setting up the Maggie Negan spinoff here because it would have just been laborious for me.
Yeah, but I wonder if that's like so why. why does, so Negan takes off and Maggie goes to find him to say, hey, actually, it's cool. I bet they have already
shot the opening scenes that they need in the Commonwealth for that next series spinoff.
And I think so.
Some of it will, that's what the beginning of that show will be.
Okay. Cause I thought they would do, like, I'm, you know, cause yeah, you know, you've seen the trailers, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And they've got, you know, Lauren Cohen looking a lot, you know, aggressively sexy.
Sure.
And that her, it's just her and Negan. There's no, you know, Glenn Jr. or Herschel to be found.
Yeah, like climbing like, a ladder. That's it.
Yeah, I thought there would be a lot more tracks led to that. And now I just have a bunch of questions about how it begins.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, yeah, well, yeah, I think they're not, like, traveling roadshow buddy cool at the end of this episode, which was what I was predicting. I was predicting that they would be go through something super traumatic that would weld them together, like Negan would lose his whole family, she would lose Herschel, and then they're on some kind of vengeance mission. But no, there's literally no track to put that train on. So good.
Yeah, I mean it takes at least a year for Maggie to leave the community, right? She says she wants to go explore the larger world, but that's not until the memorial of Rosita's death. So maybe we should get to that. The group puts Rosita down like a beloved pet with a terminal illness. Gabriel prays over her and Eugene thanks her for making him the man he is today, which is admittedly a much better man than he was when this all started.
It is wild that Eugene is the one that gets the last moment with her, not her husband.
Yeah.
Not her daughter. The rolling roast beef sandwich comes up and be like, hey, Rosita, remember how I used to creep on you and Abraham when you're having sex?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got off to it. Boy, we've gone a long way since then, haven't we? And she's like, can I just die in peace? I was so close, Eugene.
Right. No, she says the opposite. I'm glad it was you in the end. What?
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
I guess she always knew he'd be the death of her. That's what makes sense there.
Yeah, but I gotta say, I was like, ever since, like, I was pretty much a mess ever since Fleetwood Mac started their shit. Mm. And I thought Carol and Maggie, like, being the two moms, kind of, you know, I guess Carol a mom emeritus at this point, ushering in her to bed with Coco. Mm-hmm. And then Gabriel giving her last rites. I thought that was pretty, which kind of amused her, which I thought that was appropriate. And then him leaving her with, I'll see you again someday, which is like, shows that he has come a full circle with his faith. And
I do feel like
to die peacefully, you know, that's a win in this world, surrounded by people that love you.
Yeah. And I guess that's the thing. She has like the most connections in this group, right? Cause I'm thinking about the other people who have loved ones in the community here. Carol's got like nobody but Zeke and Daryl, rather.
Okay, yeah.
But Rosita has Gabriel and Daryl and the baby. Gabriel, Eugene, the baby. I guess Maggie, she was part of her community for a long while. So yeah. Maggie cares, I suppose. Everybody else is like, I'm just trying to think, is there anyone who's more appropriate to have this loving send off for? I think the answer is no. I think Rosita makes the most sense here. Because I couldn't really see it for Carol. It'd just be Daryl bedside, like, ready for the knife.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah. I think Carol Daryl would have been powerful because, you know, you could have had so many people coming in and crying over Carol. You could have had you could have had Ezekiel, you could have Judith, you could have Maggie, you could have Daryl.
I guess know, she's Maggie important and, to... yeah, Maggie and Carol haven't, I guess they've had scenes together and they've been pretty good scenes, but it's mostly like Carol telling Maggie things she needs to hear.
Out of all the people they could have killed, this is probably the best combination of history, acting chops, and value in terms of peace on the chessboard.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And she was a fucking hero throughout the whole episode until she died. Like, she got to do some of the most badass shit, got to do a lot of cool stunts, got to save her child with her sheer mom strength. I mean, it's a pretty good way to go out.
Mm-hmm. All right. We jump forward 1 year later. Eugene commemorates the anniversary of Rosita's death by the fountain dedicated to all of their lost friends. He and Max apparently have a child named Rosie.
That's the real memorial.
The child?
Yeah, named after Rosita.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I didn't get that. She was named Rosie.
You didn't make that connection,
Rosie.
No, that's completely different name, distinct from Rosita.
Right.
This is Eugene speaks in riddles and code. I could possibly figure that one out.
Ezekiel is the governor and Mercer is lieutenant governor. And I really like this. The big speech he gives to the crowd, which we only see like the tail end of. But
yeah, like I said, it's the tribute version of the greatest political speech that can accurately sum up the last year of history of the Commonwealth. And
But you've got, you know, a guy who... Okay, we can talk about how, you know, he let the plumbing destroy his entire kingdom, but he's also the man who deeply cares about the people that he does. Serving by with his leadership
and backs it up.
Yes, at every turn, and I think he's the perfect guy to be governing here. Mercer, I wonder what the
He's
the,
also such I was thinking about the political ramifications of like he is your governor, and under your old system, he would have died as refuse on the port because no one they had to pull massive strings and Carol had to play dirty games to get him to the front of the medicine line because he was in the poor category. I just think it's like, you know, like what better person to like usher in this new, more fair egalitarian system than a person like look how good, great a governor. I wouldn't even have made it in the old, you know, the Pamela Milton Commonwealth and how many other people have been left behind and no one's gonna, yeah, it's like it works. Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't write a better speech because I think I guess I just want to see Gary Payton knock it out of the park one more time. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Carrie Payton
with an H. Yeah. And then Mercer as his lieutenant governor, it just feels right. He's another guy who deeply cares about justice and the people that he's serving.
Not a great politician, but like Ezekiel's going to groom him along and he'll be the next generation. Cause you know, Gene's getting up there. Ezekiel's getting up there in years and it's a cancer survivor. So like, it's like, you feel like the Commonwealth is in good hands leadership wise.
Yes.
And Carol is the dirty tricks person.
She's ambassador, the fixer. I would say
she's a real fixer now, not a fixer but she's like fixing the things wrong in the community that need fixing.
Totally. And Daryl has chosen to live outside the community, I guess, as a frontiersman. I think, unless he's living in Alexandria and she's just calling it the frontier.
I think that's the implication, yeah, that they've got the more rustic Alexandrians. And he probably is out patrolling, looking for herds. The same shit he's been doing for seven seasons now.
And Connie's happy working in the administration in some capacity. We don't really know what
her
title is.
I think she's a journalist still, because she says, I'm keeping the administration honest. That's her traditional journalist role. And she looks super cute in her little medicine woman dress.
So she's running the Commonwealth Times or whatever.
Yeah, I thought she was like, you know, kind of like notice me a little bit. And Daryl's like, nope, got to go on medic series. I don't do no romance, man.
You said there's some kind of line. I assume it would be here if there was a goodbye for dog, but I didn't hear it.
Somebody said yes. The dog showed up in the house when they were all listening to Landslide. He was like, you know, hopping around, getting treats out of people's hands.
The dinner party.
I think somewhere here. Whenever he says goodbye to the kids is when they talk about they'll watch dog.
Then why? Why doesn't Daryl take dog with him? I feel like...
They can't afford dog budget. Can't afford snossage. The snossage, the below-the-line number for snossages on this show got
it's
out
zero.
Of control.
It's zero at this point. Judith gets a pocket watch from Negan with her initials engraved on it.
Oh, it's a compass. It's the one... So do you remember this? When he broke out of prison and he snuck into the Grimes house and like creeped through all their stuff... This is the compass that had her initials carved on. He stole out of her room before he went on the lam.
Really? Wow.
And I guess he's held on to this whole time as a memory of, you know, her inherent goodness and her father's goodness. And
Carl's goodness. Yeah.
Been nice if they'd have had that in the series at all, so that at first glance you didn't have to look it up. It's like, what the fuck is this compass with JG? But yeah, it all tracks back to mid episode or mid season 9.
And we see that Alexandria is thriving again, potentially under the oversight of Carol and or Aaron. I think Aaron's leading that community.
Are you disappointed that Jerry's not running a kingdom of his own?
Yeah. That
Renfest. Is he just visiting? Because he's looking very regal. His outfit's looking very Renfest regal.
Maybe. It's hard to tell where everybody is governing from or over, because everybody is kind of moving around and visiting and saying goodbyes as they're leaving to go on other missions. And
yeah.
Anyway, Maggie says she wants to go explore the larger world, and Daryl's going to leave, and he says goodbye to Carol and what's left of the Grimes family, promising to bring back any signs he finds of Rick or Michonne. And he gives Carol one last hug and says, I love you.
Just like your mom and dad all promised to eventually come back.
Right?
This is your worst nightmare that you just articulated to me a year ago at your most vulnerable point and is now coming true.
You got any items that are engraved, like maybe a cell phone or something you want to give me that I can...
I got this pocket watch. I just got this pocket watch compass that, I guess I haven't needed for several years. So take it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, gives Carol one last hug, says, I love you, and then heads off on his bike. It's very sweet.
Oh, that's cute. Her fussing over him and kind of like, you know, do it.
Daryl, though, really undermining the stronger together message that this show has been going for. But, you know, he is who he is. What are you going to do?
Yep. It's ever stronger together, but you know what? The pie's a lot bigger when you're the only one getting pieces out of it. So there's that, also that other saying.
And that's kind of the end of what you would consider the Walking Dead storyline as we know it. But
before we get to the Rick and Michonne part, as Daryl is taking off, there is one zombie that's front and center that he steers around. He's got long hair. That is Greg Nicotero.
Nice.
If the internet is not lying to me. So the old man finally made it in as a zombie. Does he never has been before, has he? That's been
is
like
that
something.
True? I don't know. A lot of zombies on this show. I couldn't say for
almost
sure.
Almost didn't recognize him outside of his beret.
Sure. So let's do the Rick and Michonne stuff, which is kind of both a teaser and a wrap up. The Rick and Michonne sit by the campfire, think about the dead and the living as they talk about how everyone is part of a single continuum of life, I guess. A continuum that is a single life. Apparently, Michonne believes in an afterlife.
Endless love. I've heard a song about this.
Sure. She says Carl is literally alive out there somewhere and promises to find him. Is she talking about heaven? Is she talking about, like, maybe Carl's not actually dead, though we've seen his body? Like,
no, I think she's talking about Rick. And Rick's talking about Michonne. And the concept here is they're both writing messages to bottles that they're going to hope gets back to their family in some horseshit way.
Yeah. It's cut like almost like they're together in a weird way at the beginning of this, right? Because they're both kind of in similar situations, sitting by campfires, but they're
It's kind of like in Five Will Goes West, where him and his sister are both singing to the same moon. It's kind of that thing. Uh-huh. They're both around a campfire thinking of each other, and it's shot like they're together, but clear they're not.
Right. Because we'll find out that Rick, he throws his pack onto a boat as a chopper circles overhead, demanding that he surrender.
And that pack is later found by Virgil, right? That's how Virgil gets a hold of the cell phone.
I think so, because that boat is super familiar to me. Yeah,
because I also think that this, like, Rick is all flashback to something that happened years before, and Michonne is like current day.
I think so.
Well, Scott Gimple wrote this whole scene and was sinfully proud about it, because he's telling everybody on the after show and the Red that he wrote this thing. I think this is a mess. I think this was really confusing. The most effective part was the video montage of literally everyone has been on the show.
Right, but all the language over that was very confusing to me. As I said, I mean, I literally thought that Michonne believed in an afterlife because she thought that
she was gonna,
people that she knew were dead were out there somewhere.
Right. She was going to go onto the ancestral plane Say hi to Black Panther, find Carl there chilling, and then bring him back. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was dumb. I thought, like, the stuff, it worked for what it is. Like, when Rick was talking about all the people he'd known and all the things he's taken from them and the things that made him who he is today. Like, but, like, when they start talking about how we're the ones that live because we never die, because we're all one love, and we're endless because love is endless, and we're pieces of all, like, we're a colony of bacteria, and what does it matter if a cell or two gets killed as long as the colony survives? It's fine, but it's just like, I thought it was just a word salad mess of a
exactly of a denouement. It is Scott Gimple going, why use 20 words when 400 will do? Like, right. he's wanting to make the point and feeling like, the thing I wrote in the last sentence doesn't really get across exactly what I want, but I like parts of it, so let's just write another sentence that says a little bit more about it. And I'm close, but not quite. There was never anything cut from the dialogue there.
I think
he always
Gimple
just, like, kept adding on and adding on and adding on and ended up with a mess. Yeah.
I think Scott Gimple is the worst part of The Walking Dead. If we're going to rate showrunners, he's at the dead last, and it's not even close. It's Darabont,
Kang, Mazzara,
and Gimple, like .. Gimple. Because
sure,
Gimple not
dog,
only did...
Dog is in there somewhere between Mazzara and Gimple.
But the big problem with Gimple is, like, no one could tell him anything. Like, he took over that show and is the biggest show on television, not even a lie. Thought he did it. Is it the class, you know, like he had very little experience, but he thought everything he did was gold because he wrote that one episode that made us all cry when Lori died.
I mean, it's not an unwarranted confidence. Like, AMC,
but he presided over the largest drop of audience, and he's still intimately involved in all this stuff. And I don't understand, because, like, I thought this is the one thing he took credit for in this episode, and it's the worst part.
Close. I'm not a fan of the hospital, the back of the hospital, but
gotcha.
Yeah, it's not amazing. Like you said, we're the ones who live. You see flashes of everyone saying we're the ones who live as Michonne rides headlong into a herd and Rick surrenders to that chopper outside of a city.
New York?
Atlanta? It has a lot of big buildings, but it's so destroyed I can't actually
tell.
What
body of water could this possibly be?
Right? This is not a river around New York. I can tell you that
much. No, it's not. Like, it's not across from the
Hudson?
This is way too small
to be the Hudson. Yeah. Unless global warming has kicked into high gear.
It's also tough because the city's fucked up. There's clearly buildings that have fallen down. It's like, I wasn't sure if it was, like, Philadelphia. But I don't know, like, I don't have a good handle on many city skylines. But,
same here.
It's some big city.
Yeah. And then we cut over to Judith, who says, we're the ones who live one final time as her and I think RJ are.
It's definitely RJ.
It's RJ?
Rick Jr.
Okay.
Rick Jr.
Are looking out over just like the sea of flowers. I see they've taken their strategy from the hilltop where they plant all their crops outside the gates.
I think this is literally hilltop.
That couldn't go disastrously wrong.
I think this is literally hilltop. They're back at hilltop.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
I like the trooper scarecrows. I thought that was cool.
Okay. Yeah.
I liked how we ended. I wasn't sure about the Rick stuff because I'm pretty sure these are different times. I have no idea who this guy asshole in the helicopter he is talking to and what that means to be a consignee and why he's barefoot with this triple circle thing and why he's stepping so lightly as a barefooted person in this beach that's just essentially zombie faces.
Yeah.
With biting feet. But
yeah, I'm
assuming
all of this is explained in Fear of the Walking Dead, at least, you know, the circle stuff, who these circle communities are. But I don't know. And then we get that's not really the end of the episode, because there's a big old advertisement for the Walking Dead spinoffs. There is Dead City, which is the Negan spinoff, Maggie and Negan. There is the super inventively titled Daryl Dixon and the super inventively titled Rick and Michonne.
Right. Yeah, why did they go Dead City? Why isn't just Negan and Maggie? Right.
So you pick a theme and stick. Because Gimple was naming him. He's just like, I don't know.
Because it seems like Dead City is the one that they're furthest along on. I bet they've got that because these others are essentially working titles. They're gonna call.
But my God, to advertise them in big bold fonts with title cards and everything as Rick and Michonne and Daryl Dixon. I mean, the Daryl Dixon one's got to be pretty far along too, right? You don't want to give him like a year off and then he just he changes
shows
his mind.
Up,
I don't know,
100 pounds overweight,
right?
Balding.
No, they need him sweating teeth. in the woods of Georgia in order to keep that weight off. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the incentive for him to come back. Like, I feel like I feel like Norman Reedus has phoned in a vast stretches in terms of even stunt work in this season. Like, I'm not like, what does he look like when he's anchoring a thing? The tagline of all this, bigger and deader. Oh my God. Oh my God.
And Fear the Walking Dead gets a little bit of.
Yeah. Also, that's still going on.
Mm-hmm. And that is the Walking Dead universe.
The Walking Dead universe. They also had a sweet moment with the stars all saying goodbye to the fans, and they got everybody back. They got Chandler Riggs, Sarah Wayne Callies, David Morrissey showed up, Lenny James, of course, you know, Chad Coleman. Like people long gone and gone on other projects came back to, you know, just do a little thank you package for fans. I thought that was pretty.
I did too. I liked it. A lot of it felt, I guess the people who've been on the show longer felt more heartfelt, like Daryl. Norman Reedus saying that he loves everybody and thanks them. That was, I felt like that was real.
Plus they're still buttering his bread. So he you know,
sure.
He better.
That's it for The Walking Dead. Are we ready? Are you ready, Aaron, to start The Walking Dead rewatch podcast?
No, I think I'm going to take 11 seasons off and think of our other options. And then, sure. When we come back for the 20th anniversary, then.
I mean, the 20th anniversary, we're over halfway there, man. Halfway to the 20th anniversary for The Walking Dead.
We have, without a doubt, spent 1,000 hours talking about this show.
Gotta be, with instant takes and feedback episodes. And
that's what I'm thinking. There's something like 378 episodes of The Walking Dead, bare minimum an hour a piece. And then you talk about the instant takes, you talk about the feedback episodes.
The hour and a half that is our typical podcast, at least.
Right. Yeah, no, it's certainly the thing we have the most coverage of, like, you know, especially you and I. Like, I think maybe the Breaking Bad universe might if I'd stuck with Better Call Saul to the end. But yeah, it's the end of an era and the beginning of a universe. Do you think that they're actually going to be able to keep doing these things? Or do you think these things are all going to be, these are all essentially vanity projects clinging on to things that are...
I mean, it's the best bet they got, right? Like, I'm trying to think of the other AMC stuff that's happening. I feel like it's Shudder is probably like the number two thing that is making them money. But The Walking Dead has to be their biggest earner still.
Yeah.
Maybe even with the diminished audience, because what other make shows?
And if you are in on this, will you still be on for a limited version of something that has like a fraction of the budget? I don't know. Also, correction, there's only 177 episodes of The Walking Dead.
Oh, then we didn't hit 1,000 hours.
Probably 500. Let's say 500.
Sure.
Maybe 500. That's a lot of hours. It's a lot of episodes. And I know for a fact that I'm going to watch at least a couple hours more when the Negan stuff comes out, when the Daryl Dixon stuff come out, especially. Probably the Rick and Michonne thing. I'm kind of vested in that. I'm not going to promise podcasts or even probably reasonably tease them. But if we do watch them, I'm sure we'll talk about them on OTC, our premium off the clock show.
Yeah,
I got a lot of mix. Like I said, I had a lot of emotions at the end of this. Even some of the fan package stuff. Like I said, I'm a little bit of a softy right now, but I think it's hard to get to the end of this and not feel something about it. You know, this has been the second show we started covering, you know, on a lark because we had so much fun with Breaking Bad, and you were.
It was the first show we tried to cover.
It could have been the very first show. In fact, it was. Like, we just didn't release the episodes. But yeah, it was the very first pod. We just, I don't know why.
People don't know. Let's throw a little bit of history in here. If people don't know this podcast started in our minds is a podcast called Zombie Drill,
mm-hmm.
which we, in the lead up to season one of The Walking Dead, we're going to review Romero's famous zombie movies, the originals.
Yep. Like we're going to work our way through the classics.
Uh-huh. And we had this kind of all ready to go. We recorded a couple podcasts, and I forget why it didn't happen exactly, but it probably snuck up on us like a lot of stuff does.
Yeah.
And we just didn't have it ready in time. But yeah, started life as a podcast called Zombie Drill. And when we finally got around to actually doing it, it turned into The Watching Dead.
And it is, yeah, but it's like the second show we kind of officially covered. It's certainly the longest show we've covered at this mm-hmm. point. And, you know, we just talked about this on lunch with Jim and Aaron, one of our other premium podcasts. Someone was talking about how we felt about it. And this show also has probably a disproportionate amount of audience. Like it's hard to beat the giant net that was Game of Thrones towards the end. But like 11 seasons, and at its height, this was like, you know, back in the day, this and The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones kind of duked it out. Every year they'd come back and they'd both double their audiences. Hmm. And it's kind of running rough. And eventually Game of Thrones left everybody in the dust. But like,
yeah,
disproportionate size of our fan base also comes out of the Walking Dead history.
Yeah, found us on The Walking Dead. Not still be watching the show, but they're listening to us still.
We rage quit this show and came back during a real life pandemic and picked it back up and started covering it. And now we're here. It's like, what a fucking long twisting road we've had with this thing.
Yeah, kind of amazing.
We will have at least one more episode. We're going to wrap mm-hmm. things up. We got to open up our mailbag. See how everybody else thought about this final season. And I also want to say that if you are a fan of Bald Move and our zombie stuff, you might want to subscribe to Bald Move Pulp, because that's where we put all of our zombie science fiction type coverage. Because in just about 2 months, a little under 2 months, what I think is going to be a really fine zombie show, The Last of Us, is going to come into HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim and I, like, it's back in the old Darabont days where it's like, oh my God, a prestige zombie show. What the hell are we going to do?
Yeah.
We're going to get the band right back together and fight more zombies with Pedro Pascal and Little Lady Mormont. So definitely subscribe to Bald Move Pulp if that sounds like a good time to you, because we're going to be starting that January 15th is when the first episode drops, and we're going to be there from the beginning. So not taking a huge, long zombie vacation. If you want to follow us, twitter.com/baldmove is a great place. We also have baldmove.com. If something were to happen to Twitter, I don't know why it would, but if something were to happen, we've got baldmove.com. We're at Discord at discord.baldmove.com if you want to follow our community, because we'd sure like to have you along for a lot of the rides. And we've got a bunch of stuff this year in terms of returning shows like Severance and Yellow Jackets and Foundation. I mentioned The Last of Us that we're super excited for. And we'd like to have you along, keep you along on the Bald Move experiment. WatchingDead@baldmove.com if you want to send in any feedback for the wrap-up show that we'll be recording next week after Thanksgiving. For mainline stuff, this is it. This is the end. Any last words, Jim?
No, we'll see you next week. We can do all of our last words there.
Well, until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Rest in piss, The Walking Dead.